Mossad. He has also survived many assassination attempts on his life. Hezbollah announced Sheikh Nahim as the new Secretary General following the Israeli assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
Well, staying with Lebanon now, where the death toll continues to rise as the Israeli regime pounds the country. The focus of the attacks are now in the eastern Bekaa Valley. Lebanon's health ministry reports at least 60 more fatalities on Monday in several areas of Bekaa, including in the Baalbek region. Now, the toll is expected to rise as rescue efforts are ongoing. The governor of Baalbek described the attacks as the most violent since the beginning of the Israeli aggression against Lebanon. The strikes occurred without evacuation warnings and coincided with intensified bombardment of southern Lebanon, including in the city of Tyre. Since October of last year, Israeli attacks have resulted in over 2,700 deaths and more than 12,000 injuries in Lebanon. Meanwhile, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations against the Israeli regime in defense of Lebanon and in support of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Israeli regime's military confirmed that some 50 rockets were fired from Lebanon towards the Galilee region, saying several impacts were identified as well. Now, the military also admitted that several rockets struck Ma'alat Tarshia in the northern occupied territories, killing an Israeli and causing damage. Hezbollah has said that it also targeted the settlement of Dalton with a barrage of rockets. These retaliatory operations come in response to the Israeli regime's relentless strikes and carpet bombings of the Arab country. Well, Iran's permanent ambassador to the United Nations has strongly condemned Israel's recent aggression against the country as a blatant breach of international law and the UN Charter.
Israeli aggression against Iran is obvious and does not occur in isolation. This aggressive attack is part of a broader sustained pattern of aggression and unchecked impunity with which Israel continues to destabilize the entire region, most notably through its ongoing aggression, ethnic cleansing, and war crimes against the Palestinian and Lebanese people.
Irvani was speaking at an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council. He said the unwavering and unconditional support provided by the U.S. to Israel has emboldened the regime to persist in its crimes and aggression. He added that Israel's acts of aggression pose a grave threat to regional and international peace and security. Irvani also slammed some Security Council members for failing to condemn Israel's illegal actions while asking Iran to restrain itself and ignore its right to self-defense, warning that the international community must not remain silent in the face of Israel's violations. He noted that the regime's impunity perpetuates a vicious cycle of violence and instability across the region. Irvani underlined that Iran reserves its inherent right to respond at a time of its choosing to Israel's act of aggression. To Gaza, where scores of Palestinians, including 25 more children, have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes on the northern Gaza Strip as the regime's genocidal war in the blockaded Palestinian territory rages on. Here's an eyewitness account of the attack on a residential building in Beit Lahia.
The bombed building here in Beit Lahia is the house of Abu Nasser family. There are tens of martyrs, tens of displaced people were living in this house. The house was bombed without prior warning. As you can see, martyrs here and there with body parts hanging on the walls.
The death toll is expected to rise further as many bodies remain under the debris of the bombed-out building. Hamas has denounced the latest killing, calling it the continuation of the regime's genocide and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. The resistance movement also slammed the international silence and inaction by Arab countries regarding the bloodshed. Elsewhere, in northern Gaza, three more civilians were killed in the Israeli shelling of the Jabalia refugee camp, where regime forces also burned down a UN-run school. Northern Gaza, particularly Jabalia and Beit Lahia, has been under crippling siege for over 3 weeks now. Since the start of the Israeli war, over 43,000 Palestinians have been killed and more than 101,000 others wounded. We're going to cross over to Daran Bala, joined by Abu Bakr Abed. Abu Bakr, please fill us in on the latest on the ground there.
Yes, just an hour ago, another Israeli horrific massacre has killed four people and injured more than 30 in an open market in West Gaza City, adding to four massacres since the early morning, particularly in northern Gaza, because the overall death toll today has reached more than 121 people. 110 are in the north of Gaza. In Beit Lahia, early in the morning, an attack on Abu Nasser family in a five-story building which was targeted killed more than 90-30. Many of them remain under the rubble as the civil defense workers and ambulances don't have the ability to deal with those many missing under the rubble, and also the number of injuries and the number of people killed. Even people there are just suffering from everything. They remain without water and without food and without any means of life. There are no hospitals, there are no ambulances. There are even no burial shrouds and nothing at all to deal with the mass slaughter of civilians there as well. And even that, Dr. Hassan Al-Safiya, the medical director of Kamal Adwan Hospital, has been calling out the world and entire health organizations to help with anything and to open a safe corridor to allow more medical supplies and a surge of supplies to the entire population. We're talking about more than 400,000 people there who are stuck in northern Gaza. Israel is pressing hard with its war of annihilation, extermination, annexation, and ethnic cleansing plan. That is Israeli plan, and because this rightly comes after the ban on UNRWA from operating inside the territory. Even in southern Gaza, the situation remains nothing like too far away from the north. In Khan Yunis, just 2 hours ago, two people were killed in an attack on a tented camp, and a number of injuries were really left after the attack. Also in central Gaza, just 3 hours ago, a drone attack, and this is the new tactic that has been followed inside central Gaza, in Deir al-Balah and Buraij camp and al-Nusayrat and other camps of central Gaza. One 32-year-old man was killed in a drone attack at the entrance of al-Buraij Fiji camp. So overall, the situation, it's just another blood-soaked day. It's just another bloody day. We lose many every single day. Particularly in the north of Gaza, more than 1,000 people have been killed since the start of the invasion. For more than 25 days, people are deprived of literally everything. There's nothing. They are just being exterminated. And they've been calling out the world. And they've just been calling out the entire world just to help us and to stop the bloodshed, to stop everything, because it seems incredibly horrifying what we are witnessing on a very daily basis. And people there, even the Israeli military, continues closing the two borders to the south and and to the north. No allowed food, no allowed clothes, no allowed supplies into the strip, either into the south, either into the north. So the Israeli military wants to make sure that its plan of ethnically cleansing Gaza is going to work out, and that's what we are mostly horrified about. Even the humanitarian organizations haven't been operating well across Deir al-Balah or central Gaza in general. The thing is that even here, when people want to afford something, now the flow of goods inside the central Gaza and Deir al-Balah has been inconsistent following the strictly imposed closure of the troop crossings, and no food, no water, no supplies have been allowed to enter. That's why for me and for thousands of families here trapped here, because there are more than 1 million people trapped and stranded in Deir al-Balah, and more people are coming from the north, from northern Gaza, from Jabalia. I've met many people who have come from Jabalia to Deir al-Balah. So they are coming to a place where nothing is available, where goods are not found, and they cannot really find any means to resist to live. That is the dilemma we're talking about, which is, you know, which really presses more people to, you know, to despair and to make the situation, the living circumstances for them more difficult. Even regarding prices here are too much unaffordable. We are really, really paying unaffordable sums to buy barely the little, just like go out in the streets. We're talking about hundreds of dollars just to provide one meal for one family. And at the same time, not all people do work. Like the entirety, almost the vast majority of the population here in Gaza have lost their work since the start of the war, which results in that more people are poor, more people are being starved on a very daily basis. That is the thing that we want to talk about. And like even here, medications inside the hospitals, many people die and pass away as a result of the lack of medical supplies and medical necessities inside hospitals here behind me at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital or elsewhere in central Gaza or the southern part of the strip. That's why the opening and reopening of these two crossings is really important to save the lives of many of thousands and millions of people, because the lives of 2 million people after, especially because again, the ban on UNRWA will put the lives of more than 2 million people at risk, and they are really, really on the verge of facing an inevitable death. That's why it's really essential to reopen the crossings, to allow a surge of food, a surge of goods to the entirety of the population. And at the same time, we want to make sure the first aim for the entirety of the population, for the entirety of people here, especially civilians, this war will end, so they can really relax, they can really get relief from the barbarity and insanity and the horror inflicted on them on a very daily basis.
Yes, indeed, unbelievable insanity and horror. Thank you so much for that update. That's Abu Bakr Abed there in Deir al-Balah. Meanwhile, global condemnation is pouring in after the Israeli Knesset approved a bill aimed at banning the activities of the United Nations Refugee Agency for Palestinians, UNRWA, in the occupied territories. UNRWA says the law is in violation of the UN Charter and the regime's obligations under international law. The agency's chief, Felipe Lazzarini, has slammed the decision, saying it will only deepen the suffering of Palestinians, especially in Gaza. The UN chief called the move unacceptable, while the head of the World Health Organization says barring UNRWA from its life-saving works will have devastating consequences. Several European countries, including Germany, France, and Britain, have also warned against the Israeli law. Ireland, Norway, Slovenia, and Spain issued a joint statement calling the regime's ban on UNRWA a dangerous precedent for the UN and other organizations. And Jordan, which hosts millions of Palestinian refugees, called the ban, quote, illegal and invalid. It brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In Britain, more people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year than over the whole of 2023, according to the latest government figures. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Britain's national broadcaster ITV has covered this story and tells us more. More people have crossed the English Channel in small boats so far this year than over the whole of 2023, according to the latest government figures. Around 29,578 migrants have arrived on United Kingdom shores since January of this year, up on last year's annual total of 29,437. A rise of 12%, this is higher than the 26,501 migrants recorded at the same time last year, but is 22% lower than the 38,129 people who made the journey at this stage in 2022. A Home Office spokesperson said, "Our new Border Security Command will strengthen our global partnerships and enhance our efforts to investigate, arrest and prosecute these evil criminals." On Friday, 25th of October, 424 people in seven boats arrived, according to provisional Home Office data. On Wednesday, 23rd of October, three people died and dozens of others were rescued when a boat sank while trying to reach the United Kingdom, and a baby died in another similar incident last week. The French Coast Guard said it rescued 76 migrants in three boats on Thursday. It also repeated warnings about the dangers of attempting to cross the English Channel, the busiest shipping lane in the world, after also reporting the deaths of 48 migrants so far this year. More than 600 ships pass through it every day, and weather conditions are treacherous even when the sea seems calm, the French Coast Guard emphasised. Shadow Immigration Secretary Paul Holmes said, "Today's numbers mark a shameful milestone in the first few months of this Labour government's catalogue of failures." Shadow Immigration Secretary Paul Holmes added, "Having done away with the deterrent the National Crime Agency said we needed, Labour bear full responsibility for this complete failure to secure our borders. Labour have shown time and again that they have no plan. They have officially opened the doors to people smugglers." A Labour Party spokesman said, "We inherited a disastrous situation with a record number of small boat crossings in the first half of the year under the Tories, running almost 20% higher than in 2023. But since then, numbers have largely stabilised and we have stepped up enforcement activity with our new border security command, recruiting 100 new investigators to go after the criminal smuggling gangs making millions in profit from these dangerous crossings. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. The number of people who have crossed the Channel in small boats so far this year has exceeded the total number who arrived in the whole of 2023, according to figures published by the Home Office. As of Friday, 25th of October, 29,578 people had made the crossing, compared with 29,437 last year. It is unlikely that the 2022 total of 45,755 people who arrived in small boats crossing the English Channel will be exceeded by the end of December of 2024. Since Labour came into office in July, 16,336 people have crossed the Channel in small boats, despite the government's policy to stop the crossings. Although there have been arrests and prosecutions of smugglers since then, along with seizures of dinghies and life jackets, there is no indication that the Smash the Gangs policy has yet had an impact on the numbers crossing the Channel. One Syrian refugee in the United Kingdom who crossed the Channel by small boat said other family members have crossed the Channel in recent weeks. This government will not be able to stop the boats when people like me and my family have no alternative way to reach safety, he said. Robert Jenrick, the former immigration minister and one of the two candidates for the Conservative Party's leadership, said, Labour's plans to smash the gangs are in disarray after first contact with reality. They've scrapped, not strengthened, the Rwanda scheme and are now powerless to stop the boats from arriving. Britain is now at the mercy of the smuggling gangs, and the British public will pay the price with more asylum hotels and dangerous individuals on our streets. On Wednesday, three people died trying to cross the English Channel, taking the number of dead in the Channel this year to 56, compared with 12 people last year. The latest death comes just days after a baby died on board a dinghy. Utopia 56, an organisation that supports migrants in northern France, posted a message on social media on Thursday saying it had received a high number of distress calls from people on at least 10 different boats crossing the English Channel. The organisation passes GPS coordinates of any dinghy in distress to British and French coastguards. The UK Coast Guard confirmed to The Guardian that on Thursday it was involved in an operation in the Channel relating to small boats involving Border Force vessels and a fixed-wing aircraft. Enver Solomon, the CEO of the Refugee Council, said, "We must not forget that those making the perilous journeys across the English Channel are desperate. They're desperate men, women and children fleeing persecution and war in countries such as Afghanistan and Sudan, simply seeking safety and a future free from fear." Given this year has already become the deadliest for channel crossings, it is imperative that the British government must do everything possible so refugees no longer have to put their lives in danger by adopting a comprehensive strategy that includes not only disrupting smuggling networks, but also ensuring safe and legal pathways for those seeking asylum and working closely with European partners. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for the Home Office said, "We all want to end dangerous small boat crossings which threaten lives and undermine our border security. The people smuggling gangs do not care if the vulnerable people they exploit live or die, as long as they pay. We will stop at nothing to dismantle their business models and bring them to justice."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
When we talk about the past glory of the Muslim civilization, you know, it reminds me of a letter that some of the university students from Europe wrote to the Grand Ayatollah Sistani asking for advice. This is about more than 10 years ago. And he wrote a few points there, and one of them was very, powerful, and I would like to share that, where he says that in whatever discipline and subject that you study, you know, do the best. Do not just be as, you know, normal, on a normal level, go at the top. And then he specially emphasizes medical science. He says, go into it. And he says, you know, just do not be followers of others. Become the innovators yourselves. Be creative. You know, you have to be at the cutting edge of the science and technology at the moment. And then he ends with that long, you know, advice at the end where he says that you can do it because our ancestors in the past have done it. And they were not more blessed than you are. So you have the ability, you know, to reach to the highest level if you want. We have the history, we have the example, we have the faith which is actually supporting us to go in that direction. And so, unfortunately, you know, when I read this letter of this French patient who went to Cordoba, and the way he describes the cleanliness of the hospital and even being free and everything, you look at the Muslim world at the moment. You know, I know personally two of my relatives from U.S. who are doctors who go with this Imamia Medics International, you know, program they have to train the doctors in Iraq. And some of the stories I hear is really disappointing. You know, they go on one year, first trip, you know, 1 month spent with them, how to do the protocol, especially maintaining the cleanliness of the equipments which are being used on the patients. They go after a year, everything is back to normal. You know, all the manuals which was written and translated into Arabic, and they would go and start again. And this is where we have to realize, you know, I talked about how the Muslim world has lost Ali. I think even the Shias have lost Ali. You had to go back, really. We have to be in the forefront of the, field of science and technology. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us that, you know, spirit to be among the true followers of Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. So I would like to very quickly go through sermon number 203 of Amir al-Mu'mineen, where he says, أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ إِنَّ الدُّنْيَا دَارُ مَجَازِ وَالْآخِرَةُ دَارُ قَرَارُ. O people, surely this world is a passage, while the hereafter is the permanent abode. So we are not here to stay forever. فَخُضُوا مِنْ مَمَرِّكُمْ لِمَقَرِّكُمْ. Therefore, in this passage, in this dunya that you are, you know, gather whatever you can for your permanent abode. Remember that Akhirah will not be built for me and you there. Whatever is there for us in the Akhirah has to be built in this dunya. So there is a very, you know, strong connection between dunya and akhirah. And then Ali says, وَلَا تَحْتِكُوا أَسْتَارِكُمْ عِنْدَ مَنْ يَعْلَمْ أَسْرَارَكُمْ. Do not tear away your curtain before him who is aware of your secrets. Means don't do something that on the day of Qiyamah you are exposed totally. وَأَخْرِجُ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا قُلُوبَكُمْ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَنْ تَخْرِجُ مِنْهَا أَبْدَانُكُمْ. You know, take your hearts away from this dunya before your bodies are taken away from this dunya. In a sense, you know, don't be attached to this dunya. Use it. But be the master of the dunya. Don't be the slave of this dunya. It's very much like the hadith of the Prophet where he says, because the Amir al-Mu'minin here then ends by saying, وَفِيهَا أُخْتَبِرْتُمْ وَلِغَيْرِهَا خُلِقْتُمْ. Here you will be tested and you have been created for the hereafter. The Prophet says something, مُوتُ قَبْلَ أَن تَمُوتُ. Die before you die. And people say, what does it mean to die before you? Does it mean we have to commit suicide? No, that's haram. What it means is, the first mutu means, you know, do tawbah before you die. Because that is the most important element in preparing ourselves for the akhirah. And then Ali says, فَإِنَّ الْمَرْأَ إِذَا حَلَكَ قَالَ النَّاسُ مَا تَرَكَ. Two different perspectives. Yeah? Sometimes we don't think about it. He says, when a person dies, people say, What did he left behind for his children? That's the main concern that we have when somebody passes away. وَقَالَتِ الْمَلَائِكَةِ. But when the malaika will look at that dead person, they will ask, you know, مَا قَدَّمَ. You know, what did he send ahead of himself, for himself in the akhirah? Because Ali says, لِلَّهِ آبَاؤُكُمْ. You know, may Allah bless you. فَقَدِّمُوا بَعْضًا يَكُنْ لَكُمْ قَرْضًا. At least, you know, send something at the front to the akhirah. And Allah will keep it there as an amanat. You know, and it will be like a loan. You will be rewarded, multiplied in a multiplied manner. And then he says, وَلَا تُخَلِّفُ كُلًّا. It shouldn't be that you don't take anything there. Do not sign anything for the akhirah. You leave everything for your children and your family. Because then you will be lost over there, and you will also be responsible for what is being done with what you leave behind. And this is where, you know, Amir al-Mu'mineen reminds us that, think about it, the malaika will ask, what have you sent for yourself in the akhirah forward, and not only what you are leaving behind. I don't mean to say that Ali is saying you don't care about your family, but, you know, the words there are, فَقَدِّمُوا بَعْضًا. You know, send something. وَلَا تُخَلِّفُ كُلًّا. And do not leave everything. So there has to be a balance. You can take care of your family for after you passed away, but also make sure you have prepared, you know, the akhirah for yourself. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala forgive of your sins and keep us among the true followers of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adim Alimun Halim Hakimun Matim. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد.
وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
One sleepless night my window broke, my olive tree went up in smoke. I heard the children scream, I heard the war drum beat, gunpowder in the air, dead bodies on the street. It won't take long for the dark clouds to go, for the sun to come out and shine on my home. They raised their flag in blue and white, erected walls in broad daylight. They walked with tanks, they spoke with guns.
Fears that the British government's descent into authoritarianism will be one of the legacies of their material support for Israel abound, with no end in sight for their financial, political and military support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. Activists in the United Kingdom have expressed significant concerns regarding an unprecedented wave of criminalization targeting those advocating for Palestinian rights and climate change. Reports indicate that British authorities are increasingly utilizing anti-terrorism laws and anti-mafia legislation to detain and prosecute these activists and journalists. The campaign group, Defend Our Jury, said Since July, over 40 pro-Palestine and climate activists have reportedly been imprisoned, either after conviction or while awaiting trial. The campaigners highlight a notable suppression of the right to protest in the United Kingdom, particularly affecting those involved in advocacy for Palestine and in advocacy for climate change. Palestinian solidarity groups have raised alarm, viewing the crackdown as an attempt to silence dissenting voices and undermine their right to free expression. Similarly, climate activists, especially those involved in high-profile protests organized by groups like Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil, are facing severe penalties for their actions aimed at drawing attention to the subject of climate change. In December of last year, the Metropolitan Police reported that they had arrested 630 Just Stop Oil activists, a British environmental activist group, within that month, a statistic that civil rights organisation Liberty described as staggering and shocking. Recent legislative changes, including the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill 2022 and the Public Order Act 2023, have significantly expanded police powers and allowed the Crown Prosecution Service to curtail the rights of protesters. The laws have made it easier for law enforcement to pursue harsher charges against the demonstrators, while the Court of Appeal has removed essential defences previously available to them, leading to increasingly severe penalties for those facing trial. The situation has escalated to the point where counter-terrorism officers have executed search warrants against journalists, such as Asa Winstanley of Electronic Intifada, under the Terrorism Act, further illustrating the extent of the crackdown on dissent. On 6 of August this year, six Palestine Action members were detained for a week without charge under the Terrorism Act after storming an Israeli arms company, Elbit Systems Research Hub, in the Filton area of Bristol. Another four members of the group were rounded up in the following days and accused of being connected with the action. In March of this year, the court ruled that the beliefs and motivation of protest defendants could no longer reconstitute a lawful excuse for criminal damage if the link between the action and the harm it was intended to prevent was too remote. Also, conspiracy charges are also increasingly being wielded to conduct mass arrests of activists ahead of action. The intersection of these movements raises concerns among activists and human rights advocates about the potential of stifling of critical discussions surrounding social justice and environmental sustainability. Website Electronic Intifada has also covered the same story and tells us more. British counter-terrorism police have raided the North London home of investigative journalist and researcher Asa Winstanley. Approximately 10 police officers arrived at Winstanley's home just before 6 a.m. local time and served the journalist with court warrants, authorising them to search his house and vehicle for devices and documents. Police officers informed the associated editor of the Electronic Intifada news website that the raid was linked to online posts he had made and that they were being investigated for possible encouragement of terrorism. However, Asa Winstanley was not arrested and hasn't been charged with anything as yet. Human rights observers say the raid is yet another example of the British government trying to smash anti-Israel dissent and intimidate others from speaking out about Israel's endless atrocities. Masoud Shajareh, the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London, said Terrorism legislation has always been misused, and unfortunately, now we are seeing it being misused against a journalist, and this is outrageous. This should not be allowed to take place, let alone continue. The raid on Asa Wynne Stanley's home is just the latest example of counter-terrorism legislation being used against journalists in a country that claims to be a safe haven for free speech and journalistic integrity. Yet, in recent months, the United Kingdom has used far-reaching powers against prominent journalists such as Kit Clarenberg and Richard Medhurst, as well as human rights campaigners such as Sarah Wilkinson. Campaigners fear that these types of raids are intended to silence all opposition to the crimes being committed by the Israeli regime and to normalize them in the eyes of world public opinion. Masoud Shajareh added, "It's not Gaza that is at stake, it is not Lebanon that is at stake, it is not Iran or Syria that is at stake, it is the future of humanity that is at stake. If we allow the axis of genocide to create normalization of genocide as a means of addressing conflicts, and that becomes the norm, then there is no hope for future of humanity." Fears that the British government's descent into authoritarianism will be one of the legacies of their material support for Israel abound, with no end in sight for their financial, political, and military support of the Israeli genocide in occupied Palestine and Lebanon. The Terrorism Act 2000 is not new in the United Kingdom and has been used for over two decades. It is the centrepiece of counter-terrorism legislation that went into effect in 2001. Since then, Amnesty International has issued several reports in which the organisation has voiced its concerns surrounding the counter-terrorism legislation in the United Kingdom. In a report published in January of last year, they expressed their concern about the definition of terrorism in Section 1 of the Act. In August of 2015, the United Nations Human Rights Committee expressed concern that the United Kingdom had maintained the broadly formulated definition of terrorism in Section 1 of the Terrorism Act 2000 that can include a politically motivated action which is designed to influence a government or international organization, despite significant concern that the definition of terrorism is unduly restrictive of political expression. Julia Hall, researcher on counterterrorism and lawyer with Amnesty International, explained. She said, "The recent arrest of people opposing the Israeli genocide in Gaza could be an example of how the act is abused." Julia Hall said, "The use of the law has escalated since October of last year, and that this is very concerning, as it could have a chilling effect." She added, "This means that the use of the Terrorism Act leaves people in a state where they're afraid of what they can say, and many people then choose to stay silent." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khamenei, the leader of Islamic Revolution, led the Friday prayer on October 4, 2024, in the Imam Khomeini Musalla, following the martyrdom of the Mujahid on the path of God, martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, and on the eve of the first anniversary of the epic Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. This is the Imam Khamenei's second sermon in Tehran's Friday prayer. Hezbollah is truly a shajara tayyiba, blessed tree. Hezbollah and its heroic martyred leader are the essence of Lebanon's historic virtue and identity. We Iranians have long been familiar with Lebanon's and its merits. Figures such as al-Shahid Muhammad ibn Makki al-Ameli, Ali ibn Abdul Al al-Karaki, al-Shahid Zainuddin al-Ameli, Hussein ibn Abdul Samad al-Ameli, and his son Baha ad-Din, who was known as Sheikh Baha'i, along with many other religious and scholarly figures, have enriched Iran with the blessings of their extensive knowledge in the periods of the Sarbadars and Safavid governments in the 8th, 10th, and 11th century of the Hijri calendar. It is our duty and responsibility of all Muslims to repay our debt to the wounded, bloodied Lebanon. Hezbollah and the martyred Sayyid have taken steps in defense of Gaza and jihad for Al-Aqsa Mosque, delivering a blow to the usurping cruel regime. They have provided a vital service to the entire region and the entire Muslim world.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The insistence of the US and its allies on ensuring the safety of the usurping regime serves as a cover for their lethal policy of changing the Zionist regime into a tool for seizing all the resources of the region and using that regime in a major global conflicts. The policy is to turn the Zionist regime into a gateway for exporting energy from the region to the Western world while facilitating the import of goods and technology from the West to the region. This approach ensures the survival of the usurping regime and increases the entire region's dependency on it. The Zionist regime's brutal, reckless behavior toward the resistance fighters stems from its self-surviving desire for such a situation. This reality helps us to realize that every blow to the Zionist regime by any individual or group is not only a service to the entire region, but to all the humanity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.